Las Culturistas is brought to you by the Forever Dog Podcast Network.
Find us and other great podcasts at www.foreverdogpodcasts.com.
And if you're loving what you're hearing, subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts.
And while you're there, please write us a nice review and give us a 5-star rating.
Thank you all!
Thank you all!
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling!
Well, there's a little bit of a lilt in that.
I have to say, there's been a lot of changes in my life lately, and I felt like changing up the ding dong.
Okay, here we go, because I, just before we hit record, I had asked you, you're just coming in from work.
Yeah.
We're recording in the evening on a Sunday evening.
Yes.
You're working the weekend shift.
Famously.
You're in your Brooklyn Crab regalia. So what's going on? And you said, well, I'll tell you why. And I sense this chipperness, this energetic spirit. What is it? What's going on?
You won't believe this, but...
Oh, my God.
This bitch has become a kombucha bitch.
Oh,
I have begun to drink kombucha each day. And let me tell you something.
I'm so excited.
And Las Culturistas listeners know they've been on a health journey with me.
Sure, yeah.
And us all.
And us all.
And I have to impart this wisdom onto you.
Okay, I'm not...
Let me tell you something.
Here we go.
I have famously had bronchitis and then the flu.
Mm-hmm.
And then... For over a month, you guys, and I truly think of you all, the listeners, as close friends of mine, so I will share this with you.
Please.
I have not been, quote-unquote, regular in a long time.
But then the kombucha.
And then I was speaking with one Mo Fry Pasek.
Mo!
And I said, you know, I was on a series of antibiotics this summer, and she goes, well, there you go. They fucked you up. So I was truly wrecked. And she said, you need probiotics. She said, you need... to drink kombucha, or go to the store and buy the pills. But she's like, but they're expensive. I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll try kombucha. And I literally asked, what is it? Because I thought it was some sort of like coffee offshoot. But little did I know, it is raw, organic, literal live bacteria in a glass bottle.
Yeah, it's like vinegar water.
Yeah. And you think, wow, that's disgusting.
It's yogurt water, I'm sorry.
I live for it.
Okay, and I'm not totally on, I haven't been totally on board with kombucha because...
Have you tried it?
Yeah, of course. Just, you know, I was an early adopter. I got in on the ground floor with kombucha,
I feel.
I'm just kidding.
Pioneer.
What a disgusting sentence to say. But I just never...
I got in on the ground floor with kombucha.
I never, it never did it for me. But if you're saying, because you know what? I've been complaining to you. I've been taking poisonous shits lately.
Yeah, water.
Water, but also like...
Not good.
I'll wake up in the middle of the night, and usually, you know, when you do a little diarrhea, like, it's like, after that, you feel great.
Yeah, you feel
really... But not in these times. Like, I've had to go to the bathroom, like rule of three, I've been going to the bathroom 3 times within the span of 30 minutes because...
Like
clockwork three, because my bowels are just wrecked, and I think it's because of the antibiotics.
You know, it's rule number 92 of culture. Comedy and diarrhea.
The rule of three. Like clockwork three. That's... Okay, well, great.
Well, I have to tell you, there's so many different flavors. And I recommend 2 brands.
Okay.
Synergy and Health Aid.
Synergy is like the big one.
Synergy is like the famous one.
Yeah.
And so I actually just had a kind of not great one, which was a strawberry flavor.
I've tried the strawberry and was not on board with it because they have the little seeds in there.
Ginger Aid.
Oh, fun.
That's the one you need.
Okay.
Ginger beer flavor.
And our guest is nodding in agreement.
Our guest is nodding in agreement, and I not in agreement because can I tell you something?
We love him.
I'm so excited.
I'm so excited
and
for him.
I'm so thrilled because I feel like, you know what, Bo?
Yeah.
I feel like we've had a lot of great guests, but it's time to get a good old-fashioned queer in here. I said it's time to get a good old-fashioned queer
That's
in here.
That's what you said.
And we were discussing who's going to be on the show, and you even said.
I even said, let's get a gay.
Let's get a gay. It's time.
It's time.
I cannot believe you're outing me.
The time is now.
Let's list the
for
credits.
Gay.
Let's list the credits, bitch.
All right. The credits are as follows. His web series, Unfunny Gay Guys, you can find that on his YouTube channel, bitch. Also on his YouTube channel, Untucked the Musical, which is a collaboration between he and friend of the show, Henry Kopersky. And this is where they take amazing little well-known segments from Untucked from RuPaul's Drag Race and musicalize them in fabulous,
brilliant,
fantastic ways.
Brilliant.
And an upcoming new project.
I'm so excited for this.
Yes. It's called Slumber Party. It's going to be a new talk show featuring Tim, also on Tim's YouTube channel. And in order to more accurately find the YouTube channel, you should know the bitch's name.
Here we go. And his name is...
Tim Murray! Oh! And what a day.
What a day it has been. I'm following a conversation about feces.
Yes!
Conversation about feces and then Tim Murray.
Because it's a gay show.
Because it's a gay show.
We got to get real about the feces.
You got to get real.
Unfortunately, as gays, we have to confront fecal matter.
Often.
Here's
often.
Something. I'm recently starting to douche, and I bought this really chic-looking bulb from Amazon, but it doesn't work. The suction is bad, and you really have to try these out. It's a really hit or miss thing with buying these douche bulbs to wash to clean your hole out. Because
I've never once douched.
Me neither.
I've done the fleet enemas that they sell at Duane Reade. I've done those, but apparently those are bad for you if you do them a lot because it just like really eats away.
Gets real up in there.
It gets real up in there and it really starts to like tenderize your
tenderize the meat. There's no way.
Don't
you need your whole
meat.
Well done.
Absolutely. Well done.
Well,
or rare but not tender.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. I thought I'd bring that into the conversation just because it's part of the feast.
I'm thrilled that you did.
Honestly, listen, and I feel like we can open up to you.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel I can open up to you. Can I just start this off by saying,
what?
Do you remember the best day of your lives?
Yeah, I think it was when we were in Disney World.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Mine was when I saw Idina Menzel in Wicked when I was 18.
But
But I feel like this is the second best day of my
life.
Oh,
my God,
because
Tim.
I'm so thrilled to be
here. To be up there with Idina is truly momentous for us.
Momentous.
Oh, my God. You know what? I just was having a rough day at work this week and just...
A rough day at work this week.
Mood boost. Thought, let me put on the Wicked OST. No.
Original soundtrack, yes.
No, Broadway cast recording.
OBC.
OBC. OBCR.
OBCR, bitch.
And God, what an instant.
I mean,
mood lift.
It holds up. One of the things that holds up. When you look, that's where I met you guys.
Yes.
We first met when we were doing Henry's Wicked mashed up with.
Devil Wears Prada.
Yes.
With Pat Regan
as Miranda Priestley.
He had never seen the movie.
No. So he famously did not, totally disregarded her performance style.
Completely. He would just come out and go, you look ugly in that outfit. And then walk off stage.
And you were Fiero / Adrian Grenier?
Yes.
No.
Fiero /
The Mentalist.
Blonde douche.
Yeah. The Mentalist.
Yeah.
And that was amazing. I remember saying to Henry, who is this bitch?
That was the first time I met Tim too. I was like, he's very funny.
That was transformative for me because I was like a musical theater douche before that.
Yeah.
Not a douche.
But like I didn't know what I was, you know what I mean? Like that type of musical theater boy that just is kind of like, I don't know where I'm going or what I'm doing, but I need like outward validation from other people all the time to like
I get it.
Feel like I am doing my art or whatever my thing.
Yeah.
And then 100%. We did that show and I was like, wait, there are like gay people that do comedy that are making their own shit and are making their own stuff. And it was honestly like a huge shift in my whole.
Yeah. Was that when you started making? No, that wasn't when you started making videos.
But honestly, I had been making videos before that, but they were only ever theater related content and very rarely. And I would rarely post about them. And then meeting you guys and Henry and your whole crew of like awesome New York queer comedians was these people are putting themselves out there all of the time.
Mm. Oh, but now you're like, I mean, now you're the one who's just like, just churning all this quality stuff.
The content keeps flowing.
I have had such a shift in the last, like, especially in the last year, but in the last like 6 months, I was like very, very depressed. Like, Bone and I were talking about this a little bit before that I was living in like an apartment with no windows and it was just dark. It was dark times. And I have had this just complete shift in my brain where I now am. I was like telling my therapist like a year ago, like, I don't know. I used to be like a happy person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now I used to like walk down the street and like hear music in my head.
Yeah.
And now I don't. And that's like very scary for me. And with the more I've talked it out and the more I realize it's just like all about creating stuff and like having fun and throwing shit against the wall and like not being afraid.
Yeah.
And improv helped with that a lot too. To be like, oh, sometimes you're gonna fucking fall on your face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%.
I love that. I just love that shift that it's, you know, that it's just opened all this stuff up for you. That's so cool.
The joy is in creating the work. And it's about the work. It's about the work. It's about the process. You also very much enjoy the process. Sometimes, like, because he is over the house all the time with Henry, and they're creating their goofs.
Uh-huh.
And you guys are always laughing.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
we've witnessed him direct us. And
he is
very much just very involved in the process. Very, very collaborative. So fun to work with. So great. And Tim,
you guys did a little shoot today.
We did a little shoot, today,
a little shoot today
for Henry's, for some of Henry's
Henry
promos.
Kersky. Look it up. At TeamMurray06. It's going to be on the YouTube.
That's
Come on,
the YouTube.
YouTube.
TeamMurray06, baby.
What can you tell us about this project that you did today?
It's a like, basically, the big thing that we're trying to do is, and one thing I've realized with one of my other videos is called We Get It, You Know Each Other.
Yeah, like, oh, okay, I love that. You need to watch that.
Yes.
Just like
everyone.
Yeah, just about two people that are like scream when they know each other. But I've been making so much fucking shit lately.
Yeah, yeah.
And it feels great. But it's like sometimes I'll make something that I'm like, this is it. Last year I made Hillary Clinton, She's All That, and just mapped the movie
that.
She's All That to Hillary Clinton, and it. No one watched it.
Yeah.
It got like no views.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. That's so true. But what I realized with this video was like all I had to fucking do was label the top of the video, We Get It, You Know Each Other. And suddenly it blew up. We are getting so dumb is a mean word to say, but we're getting like, we need things like so clearly spelled out.
Oh, no, that's
on the internet. So what Henry and I were trying to do with this is to clearly label.
Yeah.
And Bone was so funny.
No, guys, masterclass performances from Becky Shekoy and Sam Reese. These are just people that I saw.
Guys, what was the video?
Okay, so it's Henry Kapersky sitting at a piano in an audition room and just being the accompanist. And it's just, and maybe Tim, you can describe this better, but it's just different people coming in, being different versions of like, different
monsters,
types of nightmares
really.
And monsters
yeah.
in those
that
in
are
those
auditioning.
Rooms.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Musical theater monsters.
Musical theater
that
monsters.
That come in certain ways and expect certain things of the accompanist.
And treat the accompanist like garbage for the most part. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I can't wait.
So I tried a couple things where I like was flirting hard with Henry because I've witnessed that myself just in front of mine own eyes.
And
just
I admitted to you that I've done it before.
Well, I mean, we've all done it, but like with Henry specifically, it's this really funny thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I was just like pulling from my experience and just like really making Henry feel uncomfortable. And he was method, honey.
Oh, full
He
method.
Was giving you Strasburg, Stanislavski, I don't fucking know, but he was like really acting. And I was like, this is going to read really well.
My favorite thing is when Henry acts.
He's really good at it.
He's so good.
See, sometimes, and the other day he did an impression of someone. It wasn't someone that, I forget, but he came home from an interaction and he did an impression of the person.
And
then I sometimes tease him like, ooh, the actor. And he gets very bashful. But it was very good.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
He's just been inundated with like people like throwing and projecting like their own like shit at him for all this time. And of course he's
watching so much is like such a, which again, the Culture Reasons podcast, big thing for me, like hearing other people's things that they watched as kids. Like, that's why you're, when I heard Pat Regan talk about this shit that he watched growing up, I was like, that's why you are as good as
you are. Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys talking about Desperate Housewives so much makes me be like,
it's a deeply formative
in both of you.
Moment. Okay, hold on. So, because you've just brought it up organically,
oh my God, Tim.
Let's talk about this. So, Tim, what is the culture? And we ask this of all our guests.
This is the question we ask all the guests.
This is the question we ask all the guests. What is the culture that brought you into culture? It was the culture that made you decide culture at large as a concept was for you.
Is for me. I've been thinking about this a lot because, you know, I'm number one fan of the pod. At me in the comments. You're not a bigger fan than me. Thank you.
At him.
At me. And I have a really bizarre memory. Like, I can remember, like, where I was sitting and what was happening.
Yes, yeah.
I remember I was sitting, we were on vacation in Miami, and we were sitting in a hotel room, and I am watching the TV, and the news story of Tanya Harding hits Nancy Kerrigan's leg. comes across the screen, and I literally feel like I could, my whole body just like went light. And I was like, this is fascinating to me. And I looked at the screen, and it's just like the most specific, and you guys talked about this on the podcast before.
We have. I was just thinking to myself, have we talked about this? I'm almost positive that we have.
Tanya and Nancy, that's not what I'm talking about. You've talked about so specifically your friends, your sister's hot friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And how, like, what that looked like to you and what that meant to you.
Yes.
And seeing these, like, women, these, like, fierce figure skater women with their very specific hairdos.
Yep.
And their, like, specific costumes and. But what I now realize attracted me to this story so much was storytelling. Mm-hmm. Was like, it was such, so dramatically laid thick. Out for the world. It was yeah. so thick. Yeah. It was like, Tanya Harding was, and I fell in love with Tanya Harding. And I yeah. was like, she had these blonde bangs that just came down like this. And in the news story I watched, they were like, you know, poor white trash up against rich, pristine. Nancy, pristine yeah. Nancy, yeah. cold Nancy Kerrigan.
Yeah.
And that was the narrative being spun for me. So I remember going home and sitting in my bed and clamping my hands so tight and saying, dear God, I know oh. Tanya Harding didn't do it. Please, please, please let please, the world God. Understand that she is a good person and she would not have done this.
That is so interesting because you just were empathizing so much with this person who was being villainized in the media.
Yes, I was so, I'm so empathetic. But then y'all wanted a twist, eh?
We did.
She we did.
We do.
Was so bad at the Olympics. Yeah. So fucking bad that I turned.
Because they
and
have
I put
to
up
perform.
A Nancy Kerrigan poster in my room. And I've been Nancy
you
Kerrigan.
You put up a Nancy. Oh, so not even you turn your back on Tanya, you put up a Nancy poster.
I turned 180 and I joined
oh
the other
my
side.
God. Oh, my God.
I joined the other side.
That's filth.
I'm a bad person.
So, wait. I do think that maybe it's not as fascinating. Well, so it's up there for me with the OJ thing. With
yeah,
unbelievable,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You could never make it up.
100%.
Sure. The Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan thing.
And you know what else? You guys are a little younger than me, but I feel like the OJ thing was the second biggest news story of my lifetime. Maybe the first for you. Do you think?
It's up there. I mean, I will be completely honest and say that because I was in Canada it was happening, Canadians just like didn't really care about it. And so I didn't really... Like the car chase, like the whole Bronco chase thing, like that was all something that I like learned like much later on about.
Yeah.
And like so many of the details, like about like Marcia Clark and all these people, like I didn't really learn about until like
last year,
like the documentaries and American Crime Story. Like yeah. I was like, oh, like I really missed out on this because for yeah. So I mean, that's just that's interesting. But like,
did you miss out?
I do remember it dominating. But I'll tell you what also dominated and continued to dominate for years, and the two stories kind of jumbled in together for me as like, oh, that's just like I guess tabloid culture. It was what my 5-6 year old self like understood tabloid culture to be was JonBenet.
Oh,
yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
And it felt like JonBenet was never not on the cover of one of those magazines.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You go to
the
supermarket,
the grocery store,
you
absolutely.
Still see JonBenet.
Absolutely.
Seriously, like
that's
it,
crazy.
It didn't go away for years.
Yeah, and it's still the fact that it still hasn't is crazy.
Yeah,
we are such a strange culture. Like, why are we so obsessed
and
with that?
And also, two things: one, didn't realize that OJ was an athlete slash actor slash superstar until much later. Didn't understand how famous he was until I was watching Crime Story, uh-huh. and I texted my dad, and I'm like, "How famous was he?" He was like, "He was the most famous athlete of his generation." Two,
crazy.
Didn't understand that JonBenet Ramsey was a little beauty queen. Thought that was just the way
girl.
She looked.
Right.
And thought, oh my God, that pretty girl died.
She was
and
so
I didn't understand why it was such a huge story.
Yeah.
But then,
same. I didn't realize that either, I don't think,
right.
until way later.
And then you understand like what a fucked up, bizarre story it is and why it's so big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That is so
but
crazy.
But yeah, just thought that was what normal little girls like looked like.
I think
talk
I
about the patriarchy.
Oh, dark. It's a dark world.
It certainly is, Tim.
In second grade, the teacher took a poll of all of us and said, how many of you think OJ did it?
Oh my God.
And one little boy, Ricky Haas, raised his hand and said, I don't think he could have done it because he's a very good football player. And we accepted that in this Catholic school as like, oh, yeah, except for me, who was like, wait a minute.
But also, he was like taking a sample of a room full of second graders. Like, that is.
It's shocking.
But
we just talked about this last
like...
week with Ruby. Like, the positions that these teachers put kids in and like these questions that they make them answer, like talking to a bunch of 15-year-olds about abortion rights is just so fucking crazy.
Yeah. Overwrought and fraught, whatever. Yeah, it's just like, why would you do that?
It's overfraught.
Overfraught. Rule number 75. Overfraught. Okay. I would posit. Sorry, I'm trying to sound smart today.
Position it.
I would say that Princess Diana was like,
yes.
That was like the, I think that's one of the biggest stories.
I was going to say, we were a little bit older then.
Pop culture-y things.
And she was an international figure.
Totally.
And so, therefore.
No, but Princess Diana dying was before JonBenet, though.
I don't think that that's true. I think JonBenet was.
Let's look it up. JonBenet was like 97, 98.
Oh, really? Was that late?
I think she was 95. I think that was earlier.
Okay.
I think the chronology of it was.
I'm Googling it.
Tanya. OJ.
Tanya was definitely first.
JonBenet. Mm-hmm. Princess Diana.
96. Okay. And then, yeah. And then, oh, the 20th anniversary of Diana was very recently.
So
97.
Right.
Okay. So you're right. I'm so sorry. Yes. JonBenet. But JonBenet we heard about
I
in Canada.
I accept your apology.
Thank you. JonBenet we heard about in Canada. And it was like 2 years before I was going to move to Colorado. And I was like, people, and I've said this.
Yes,
a
you
times
have. You
before,
have. You have.
On the podcast. But when like my parents were telling me that we were moving to Colorado, I was like, people. That's where Columbine happened. Oh, that's where JonBenet died. Yeah, people fucking murder each other there, and that's
you did
not
know
accurate.
Columbine
not inaccurate.
Was Columbine was a big thing in Canada. That
yeah.
You'd heard
oh,
about.
Yeah.
Because
oh, yeah.
I was thinking about this when the three of us are all reading Hillary's book.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I have. It's literally out on the table right now. What
in
happened?
The gun control chapter, mm-hmm. I was crying specifically a lot because
yeah.
I really feel like that would have been her legacy.
Yes.
Had she been elected. And I thought so. I couldn't stop thinking about the second grade version of myself mm-hmm. and where I think like a lot of my paranoia comes from is that of being like, oh, anyone could just walk into this school and shoot us.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And like that, like shaped so much. And like then, was it in your guys' towns, was that like, did it become like sort of part of like, that's local culture, too?
I will say it affected my... it happened when I was in third grade. It affected my teacher so deeply that she wouldn't stop talking about it for days.
Oh,
and
no.
I she actually made us... Have I said this on the podcast? She made us all stand in a circle and listen to Hands by Jewel.
No.
And we stood holding hands and sang Hands by Jewel. My hands are small, I know, but they're not. And I've definitely
song.
Said this before.
Yeah.
But then, like days later,
oh
we
God.
All got in trouble at lunch. And my lunch monitor like pulled my teacher out and said, the kids are peer pressuring each other to be mean to someone. Or they're peer pressuring someone to do something they didn't want to do.
Wait, what is that?
And okay. The teacher came in and was like, I'm so mortified that I had to listen to that. And not for nothing, but... This is not dissimilar to what happened over in Columbine.
No.
Oh,
the
no.
The peer pressure and the bullying and stuff like
well,
that.
Well, she's kind of right.
Yes, but yeah. Traumatizing to tell a group of
course.
Yeah,
And then I realized.
So recent.
Even like in third grade, I kind of said to myself like, okay, don't absorb that. That's her issue. Like that is not. For,
yeah.
That is
what
not,
she meant to say was that like bullying is wrong, yeah. And you shouldn't make people feel isolated. But she doesn't need to like make you guys feel like you're murderers.
Like we're the next Columbine.
Right. She, I mean, who knows? Because she was connecting those dots like in a correct way. But of course, the way she was communicating it to you guys as third graders was like awful and wrong.
I think she was traumatized,
rightfully so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, like. Surreal experience having my first story pirate show in an elementary school in Long Island the day Sandy Hook happened.
No.
That was the day it happened?
The day it happened, and like we were setting up, and it was my first show, and we were performing for all these kids, and I was with Katie Skelton and Branson Reese,
yeah.
And I get this news notification on my phone
oof.
About Sandy Hook, and I was like, oh my, and I didn't want to tell them about this
yeah.
until mm-hmm. after the show.
Yeah,
because but I saw this and I went out and I looked at all these fucking kids and
yeah,
I was
it's
like,
horrifying.
This is insane. And then all of us got into the car, drove back to the city, and we were just silent. We were just like, how did this happen? It was wild. We'll never forget it.
Yeah, yeah. I joined it after that too, and I remember you go. It's weird. You go into elementary schools now and you look at the kids and you think. You just get sick to your stomach.
Are we your teacher now? Are we your third grade teacher? No.
You people did this to me. No. But it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's fucking
no,
crazy.
It's wild.
And then.
And it's crazy that it's not going to change now, especially after hearing her chapter in the book. I was just like,
yeah.
What? This is insane to me that we are not. And after Orlando,
yeah.
Then I was at my 10-year high school graduation the night that happened, and I took all these boys that I thought would hate me for being gay. We all were out at a bar together, and I was like, I know this is like so lame, but I'm having such a good time with you straight guys. let's go to the local gay bar in town. And they all came with me and we had the best fucking time. And it was just like, you know, defeating these like inner demons, like thinking these were my bullies. And then to wake up the next morning and be like, oh, wow, this just happened in a gay bar somewhere else.
Oh, my God.
In the country. And like, from like trying to bridge that gap of like making people feel comfortable and being like, even as an ally, you could be.
I mean, oh, yeah. I mean, that is just nice, isolated event wise.
It was.
That
great.
Is really nice. I don't know if I've said this before, and when he was on the podcast, I definitely didn't mention this, but the night before the Pulse shooting, Cole Skoll and I were doing a show at Union Hall, and then we walked up to Artichoke Pizza in Park Slope to get a bite, and then we were sitting there, and this crazy person like barrels in and is like screaming and screaming and screaming, and then he goes to Cole and me and starts screaming faggot at us, and then he like lunges at Cole at one point, and Cole was just like really shaken by it, and we were both shaken by it.
Yeah.
And then it was fine after that. We checked in with each other, we went our separate ways. I checked in again with him that like when he got home that night, and then the next day fucking Pulse happened, and then checked in with each other again. We were just like, we're both thinking the same thing, right? Like this, it's like, it's just so fresh that this is still happening. Yeah, like what a weird, I don't know.
It's so fucked up to think about how all these atrocities can happen. And she talks about the mothers in those chapters of you know, the murdered black youth and everything. Like, and just to fucking realize that he still was elected. You know what I mean? With nothing on that topic, and only like all the wrong things.
All the wrong things. Oh, yeah. Everyone should have a gun. Speaking of like you teaching, right? So the Orlando happened, and then a week later, I was teaching like kids, like young kids in a classroom, and I have this paranoia thing where I'm always thinking that something bad is going to happen, and I am sitting in the class, and I was just like, "What would I do?
Yeah,
if someone came in here right now, there's 40 children. Mm-hmm. What would I do if I had a gun on me? That wouldn't help.
Oh my God,
what would I do? Like,
it's not the answer. It is
not
so
answer.
Flat out not the answer. And the fact that people think it could be the answer shows
people
true,
firmly believe
like,
that that's
it's,
the answer in a truly wild way.
Oh my God.
It's insanity. But the thing that's bothering me the most about the fucking people's like furor over this Hillary book, and I'm seeing this a lot on my Facebook feeds, is it's like always the pull quote is, wow, Hillary really stuck in the past, still blaming Bernie. Fucking read the book.
It is not about Bernie.
No. This book is not about Bernie.
The library's open. Check out a card and check out the book. I don't have time for your fucking bullshit.
She spends maybe, I'm halfway through it.
Uh-huh.
But from what I've read,
there's lines
that are about Bernie and about, you know, the rightful ways in which she contributed to her loss. Not that he wasn't entitled to say whatever the fuck he wants to say and campaign however he wants, but she's also entitled to write this book.
Yep.
You don't want to fucking buy it or read it? Don't. You certainly waste a lot of your fucking time posting about it on social media. Mm-hmm. You certainly are fucking interested. But if you don't want to read the book, don't. It doesn't mean she doesn't have the right...
But you don't get to say anything about it then.
Yeah, and don't fucking tell me how to spend my money. Because people being like, well, at least don't buy it at a Barnes & Noble. You can go fucking shove your own cock up your butthole.
And, like, and let me watch on XTube, like, because that sounds... fun.
Honestly, you're all fucking disgusting.
She doesn't say anything about him or anything in the book that isn't in service of the party, that isn't in service of trying to bridge exactly why she believed the things she believed and took the stances she took and why Bernie took the stances she took. She's not blaming him. She's saying, this is how divided we are, and this is what he believed and what I believed and why I believe that was a problem for all of us coming together, stronger together.
The book is called What Happened. So she's telling you what happened. And one of the things that happened was they were in conflict and it made her look bad. And had he become the nominee, he probably wouldn't have won either, because there would have been all the fuckery that happened with Russia anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, get over it.
Yeah.
I mean, don't know.
Just, and what she's been saying in interviews is that, like, yeah, it has just been about him just doing this sort of damage that he sort of did inflict, where it was like, well, Hillary's a fucking crook because she's taking all these speaking fees. And it's like, she talks about it in the book, she's like, I mean, all my predecessors took speaking fees. Everyone else who ran for president took money from Wall Street. Like, had no reason to believe that it would have affected me this way, except in these gendered ways. And then the line that, like, punched me in the fucking gut was, like, she just has this whole paragraph where she asks these questions, like, why am I seen as a divisive figure, but Joe Biden and Bernie aren't? Why am I seen as this person, but these people aren't? Like, why am I, like, caustic, but these people aren't? And then she, mm-hmm. and then she paragraph breaks into just a one-line paragraph after that, just says, I'm really asking. She goes, I'm at a loss. Mm. And it was just like, oh!
I was at the gym when I heard, I'm listening on audiobook, and I had to put the weights down.
Oh my gosh.
And take a lap. Because it was so, it's sad. It makes me so fucking sad for my sister mm-hmm. is a fucking fierce lawyer, and mm-hmm. she didn't take her husband's name. She has, and Hillary has an amazing little paragraph in there about that, about, like,
about Bill losing the governor.
Yeah, people said that it was her fault that he lost the governor's race because she didn't take the last name Clinton.
And then when she finally did take the last name Clinton, there's footage of her just in the 70s, on an interview, on some TV press thing, and she's just like, first of all, she looked fucking fierce back in the day. Mm-hmm. Just like, she like really just looked like this. She looked like Twiggy in a way. Like, with this, like, really fierce, like, eye makeup and just, like, this straight blonde hair, brownish blonde hair. And she just looks pissed, and she's like, you know, I finally decided to take Clinton because it seemed like everyone was getting really up in arms about it. So, you know, I will now forever, and she rolls her eyes back. She goes, I will now forever be known as Hillary Rodham Clinton. And I was like, fuck that.
Fuck the
forces that, like, made that happen. And, like, for her to roll her eyes at that is, like, still so great and delicious.
Well, yes. That's fucking classic misogyny and sexism for you, and your hatred of her, everybody, is fucking
fueling.
It's just
tired. Fueling the machine.
It's also why?
Ugh.
I don't know. Read the fucking book.
Read the fucking book.
Or you know what? Or don't. Fantastic. But either way, go fuck yourself, because you're gonna read the book, and I hope you feel like shit. And if you don't read the book, continue living in your own fucking ignorance. Whatever. Maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid too much, but I happily do so. And I, like, whatever. Fuck
it's
you.
It's not harming other people.
No,
it just makes me so
me.
Mad.
It's making me feel better having, like, being able to read it. So, like, stop posting everywhere.
Yeah.
Why does this book exist?
Anyway.
I just think it is sexist to say that shit about her. Like, it's garbage.
Yeah.
Agreed, 100%.
I don't know. When you read the chapter on being a woman in politics, that's really hard to read and listen to. And the situation she recounts are so specific. Mm-hmm. And it's like, give the woman a fucking break.
Give her a break. Did you see Cory Booker being like, he basically has like a leave Britney alone moment, but about Hillary, where they're like interviewing him. He's like, just leave her alone. Like, God.
It's like, people don't fucking freak out about John McCain, like, staying silent after his presidential race loss. Like, we're still lionizing him like he's a fucking war hero, which, I mean, that's questionable to begin with. Mm. I don't know. Anyway, let's just dig ourselves out of this heavy politics hole.
Did you hear that Hillary's going to be a judge on All Stars 3?
Yes! Honestly, that would be a fucking gag.
I would gag
Chelsea. Chelsea went to Jinx's show!
Wait, what?
Chelsea Clinton went to one of Jinx Monsoon's show this past week.
Really?
And I'm just like, Hillary's gotta go. Hill's gotta go.
She's gotta go.
She's gotta go.
We gotta get her at the show.
Book her for Slumber Party.
I would such a good die to have Hillary on Slumber
Party. Oh my god.
Can't wait to have you guys on Slumber
Party. It'd be an honor for her.
You know what? I thought about this. The one question I would ask Hillary Clinton is, she is, back in the day, especially at the show's peak, she was a huge Grey's Anatomy fan, and I want to ask her what her favorite episode is, or who her favorite character is. That's all.
I love that so much. I want that question for you.
Favorite
who are your
episode?
Favorite characters and your favorite apps? Yeah.
Christina. I'm a Christina bitch till I die.
Yeah.
I didn't get Christina for a long time.
Same.
I do think that she provides some of the best moments ever. I didn't get her for a long time. My favorite character was Izzy. Until she started acting like just like a stupid idiot.
Yeah.
See, and that's the part of it that I do agree with Katherine Heigl about. The writing was
atrocious,
god awful.
It was bad.
And let's not pretend like Shonda isn't capable of that. I mean, like, she wrote
bad.
Crossroads.
Wrote, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, like, why would you say that? Crossroads is amazing.
Mm-hmm, sure. I'm just saying, like,
Crossroads is a better movie than people give it credit for.
Agreed.
Shonda Rhimes is not, she doesn't hit it out of the park every single fucking time.
No. Oh,
and
no,
also,
no,
like,
no.
She is very guilty of, like, stepping away and caring less about her shows after she feels like they're past their prime.
She gets away with murder.
So she...
okay.
So she walked... I don't know what happened with Grey's Anatomy, but season 4 was a total fucking mess. Mm-hmm. And I think that the way Katherine Heigl handled it...
There were some great moments
it,
in season 4 there, and you know what I'm talking about, especially with Christina, especially with Sandra Oh, honey.
Which one?
Just wiping the tear away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Burke monologue.
That was not season 4.
That was season
4.
Yeah,
because season 3, he leaves her at the altar.
You're talking about You Took a Piece of Me.
No,
that's season 5.
Season 4.
Season 6.
Season 6.
Unbearable?
No. It's Unbearable. That's
season 4.
Well, she has to, she goes, there you go. My relationship with Preston Burke in writing. Satisfied. Yeah, where like she has to report that she slept with Burke to the whole fucking.
It's not difficult.
It's unbearable.
You guys have talked about this before, but I want it on record from me that her You Took a Piece of Me monologue is the greatest television acting we will ever discover.
Happen again!
Except she did it with 100 times the restraint that we just did it.
Oh, yeah.
Did you watch her farewell episode?
Yes, I came back to the show just for that.
Oh, you gotta.
And it was beautiful.
Oh, my God. He's not the son.
You are. She pisses me off, though, Shonda. I'm sorry.
That's fair.
She fucking pisses me off.
Yeah.
Because I will never get over that she let Isaiah Washington come back for that episode. That homophobic piece of garbage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Got to come back and wrap up the storyline because Christina deserved it. However, like, she, like, can't fucking knock the whatever ego thing she has with Katherine Heigl, and that character gets literally no resolution whatsoever.
It's shitty.
Honestly, you know what? If you didn't like her, just fucking kill her in the cancer storyline. Don't bring her back from the literal dead in the cancer storyline, only to have the character get fired 6 episodes into the
that
next season.
That was bullshit. The cancer story was bad.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was bad. I just thought, if you're gonna, then see it through.
Yeah.
Like, have her pass away, because don't fucking have her survive only to fire the character because she made, like, a judgment error.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was so stupid. The show is so stupid. I'm sorry, but Grey's Anatomy is so fucking stupid.
But don't
stupid.
You think that we deserve a single from Ellen Pompeo?
A single?
I want to hear music from Ellen Pompeo.
Her raspy voice. Yeah.
Oh,
I
want to
hear a
God.
Pick Me, Choose Me, Love Me dance track.
Oh, wait, but... yes, agreed. And she also has been killing it on Twitter lately.
Has she?
Because,
should I follow?
Yes, because... And someone sent me this tweet of hers where she's like... some idiot tweeted at her like, she's a fucking Hillary supporter. Fuck you.
Jesus Christ.
Trump supporters hate you. We hate you. And then she like quote tweeted this person and was like, I wouldn't want a fucking Trump supporter as a fan anyway, you doof. Like she was so, she goes, newsflash, I wouldn't want it. I would never fucking want a Trump supporter as a fan.
Yeah, she's literally like actual like mouthy.
Great. I love it.
Do you ever see her episode of Punk'd?
No.
Okay, she was on an episode of Punk'd and like...
lost it.
It's insane because she's with her husband who knows that this is happening to her.
Uh-huh.
But it's like they're at a restaurant in LA and like the waitress comes out and is like being an idiot.
Uh-huh.
And she walks away from the table and Ellen Pompeo is literally like... our waitress is a fucking idiot. Like, she came out here like, doof, doof, doof. Like, she's a fucking idiot. And then she starts laughing about it. She's like, and then she starts, like, making jokes about, like, her, like, falling down and, like, hurting herself.
Oh,
like,
no.
It's Golly. Really weird. Like, and you see the husband kind of be like,
oh,
my God, we're on
TV.
We're, like, on TV right now. And you're being, and it's so funny to hear her, like, real accent.
She's from,
I think she's from Boston some sort of Massachusetts or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you hear her talk and it's not Meredith Grey talking.
It's really funny.
It's so weird.
Ellen, what a mystery.
What a mystery.
Yeah, because we only literally know her as the one character.
Have you seen the interview with her and Viola Davis and
Carrie?
And they're like, so what would you do if Grey's Anatomy ever stops? And she's like, well, I don't think it ever will. But if it does, I won't be acting anymore. And they're like, why? And she actually said something that I thought was so cool. She was like, I don't find acting very empowering. And fair. I was like, oh, that's cool. So she's like, I think I would like produce. I was like, oh, you're pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think she's totally cool.
That's so funny. I need to watch this Punk'd clip.
You should.
Ellen!
I need to watch that too.
Ellen Pompeo.
I want the whole world to burn down. I want to see everyone's true colors.
Also, I mean, Shonda may or may not have had a hand in making Sara Ramirez bisexual by writing her character as a lesbian.
Is Sara Ramirez bisexual?
She came out as bisexual like a year ago, which is great. But like, I don't know if like the character had anything to do with it.
I don't know about that, Bo. That's an interesting thesis.
I think Shonda Rhimes
well,
made Sara Ramirez
after
bisexual.
I played a lesbian, I realized I was bi.
Well, it's like that fucking Orange is the New Black writer who realized she was lesbian. She was gay after she like kept writing these queer women. I think
that's true.
There's something
really?
To it.
Is that how she discovered that?
And then she fucking just married Samira, yeah. So, I mean, I think there's something about TV.
I've also heard...
opens up what's inside of
exactly.
you already.
I've heard that Taylor Schilling is also a lesbian.
Oh, yeah. I've heard she's bi.
Oh, but that she's...
I think she's in a relationship with a woman. A famous woman. I don't know who it is. I'm losing it right now. But I feel like she's closeted.
I think you and I saw her come out. We got off at JFK and we saw her come out. She was in the car in front of us at JFK.
Did we?
I think we were going. I think this was Orlando.
No.
And she fucking came out, and I was like, "That's Taylor Schilling."
Oh my god!
What a guy.
Maybe you forgot about.
Well,
this.
Ask Dave because I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah.
We were literally very high the whole time.
I remember this very vividly. The fucking Taylor Schilling.
That's
the
crazy.
First season of that show, I was like, "This is the best season of. This is the best television show I've ever seen."
Yeah.
And then I stopped watching.
The most famous person that I've seen come out of a car is Anne Hathaway.
Anna Hathaway.
Was she getting out of the car and Meryl Streep was in the car and she was like, everybody wants to be us. And Anne was getting out because she quit.
Yeah, that was it. I was on set for Devil Wears Prada in Paris, France, on location.
To Emily. To Emily. You did do it. To Emily.
What a delicious performance.
Oh my god.
This is like our 20th good. Time talking about Devil.
Yeah, but you know what though?
But for a cultural podcast, I want it on every episode.
Alright, let's talk about a new movie. What movie haven't we talked about?
I don't know.
You've listened to every episode.
I have listened to every episode.
Hold on. There is a movie I want to talk about because I was thinking about you, Tim Murray, the whole time as I was watching it last weekend. Tim Murray famously on the first I Don't Think So Honey Live episode.
Gagged it.
I Don't Think So Honeyed Harry Potter fans. Harry Potter bullies, excuse me. And that is a specific term. And he instead proposed, instead of a Harry Potter theme park, a practical magic theme park.
I've never seen it, but I have to.
I saw it last week with Anna and Mike. And it's not a good movie. But there's great performances in it, but it's not a good movie.
Want to know something horrible?
Please.
I've never seen
Practical
Magic.
Oh, you asshole!
It was for the comedy. I was playing a character.
Yes. Great.
I was playing a character.
And so you did your research, and so you had that reference tucked away.
I had it tucked away.
That's
because
genius.
I said, in my head, I was like, do I say The Craft? Do I say... In my head, I was like, here's some witch movies, and then I was like... I love it
because The Craft is very first thought. Like everyone, like will fall back on The Craft. Practical Magic is like a nice deep cut, and I love that you referenced it, even though you hadn't seen it. Because I feel like we should not. I feel like more people should do that. I don't find a problem in doing that and referencing something that is not familiar to you. I think it's.
I do it all the time.
The reference.
We're not going to get a quiz.
Exactly.
On it.
It's not
until
a fucking...
you come on a podcast and they're like, no. Let's talk about that movie, and you're like, oh, I mean,
we don't have to talk about it. I thought of you.
But I love that you thought of me. That's so sweet.
And my problem with the movie is that it didn't know if it was going to be a thriller, a rom-com, or you know, like.
What did it end up being?
Like a fucking Franken movie of all three of those things. It wanted to be a thriller, a rom-com, and like. A fun, like Nancy Myers-esque movie. It was crazy. It was
so
wild.
It's Nicole Kidman playing like the confident witch.
No, it's Sandra Bullock playing like the main witch, like the one who wants just like your normal cipher, like you can project anything you want on her. And Nicole Kidman is like the rebellious sister.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's very Thelma and Louise too, because Nicole Kidman ends up dating this vampire who holds her hostage, and then they kill the vampire, and then they bury the vampire, and then. Their aunts are played by it's very Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Their aunts are played by Stockard Channing and fucking Diane Wiest.
Oh,
so
that
sounds
great cast and a young Evan Rachel Wood is in the movie
really?
Too. Plays Sandra Bullock's daughter. So it's a great movie, well cast, but it just doesn't know what it is, and it was just kind of unwatchable by the end. But you know, it's in the lexicon.
It's in our lexicon.
Speaking of witches.
I was just literally going to say those exact words. What are you going to say?
I was going to say that Michelle Pfeiffer is back on screen. And I can't bring myself to see it.
I don't think I'm
going to
see it.
The news feed is a disaster.
It's crazy.
I've never seen such hate for a movie.
Did you hear that it received an F cinema score rating? So this is what happens when all movies come out. What this company does is they go to 5 random cities nationwide, and they poll many audiences coming out of the theater to give the movie a score, A, B, C, D, or F, like a numerical grade, not numerical, like an alphabetical grade, like you would get, you know, in school. So famously, this can really prove to say like how a movie's going to do based on word of mouth, because it's really the audiences that drive the box office. Like the reviews help,
right?
But ultimately, I think a lot of people are going to go see Mother because they see Jennifer Lawrence. And they see like a 70% score on Rotten Tomatoes, which isn't bad.
Right.
However, it got an F for cinema score, which is like unprecedented.
So everyone hated
it. Almost everybody gave it an F. And usually usually someone likes a movie. Like for example, one of the highest scores of the past 10 years has been The Blind Side. The Blind Side got an A+. It got an A+ cinema score because Hidden Figures also had an A+.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So basically, these crowd-pleaser movies like have mass appeal, they'll get these very high scores. Great. And those are the movies that have a lot of legs at the box office. I believe Wonder Woman also did really well.
Okay,
I think
cool.
it got an A.
Sure, yeah.
So these movies have real legs. But if you get an F, that usually means the movie's fucking DOA.
Oh, wow.
So it got an F, and that's happened like 5 times.
I think it might be like a producer's type thing where it's like such a dud that people will want to go see it. I mean, I have no desire to go see it, but people are talking about it like crazy.
People are talking about it. And that's a rule of culture. Get the people talking.
Here you go. All press is good press.
But it makes me mad because there's nothing I'd want to do more than go see Michelle Pfeiffer in a movie.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, I fucking love Michelle Pfeiffer. The Children Have Forgotten.
The Children Have Forgotten. There will never be a Catwoman like Michelle Pfeiffer.
No,
Eartha Kitt was great, but honey, Michelle Pfeiffer was it.
I even thought Anne was great.
And she was amazing in Hairspray, the movie.
Oh, she's amazing in everything.
Oh, yeah. Grease 2. Come on.
She's one of the, I think, of the past, 30 years, she's one of the iconic faces on screen.
I agree.
She's amazing.
And we think that. Imagine what the generation above us would say if they were sitting around a table.
Oh, I know.
She's like one of their queens.
The gays up.
The gays up.
Yeah.
Live for the fight.
At the townhouse right now, they're talking about Michelle Pfeiffer.
But I was actually reading an article about her, which is an interesting article because she's been nominated for Oscars several times.
Yeah.
And actually has quite a versatile talent. She does period film, she does superhero movies, she does
filmography.
Traditional contemporary romantic comedies. She's got everything on her resume. But what I read about her in this article, I thought was a pretty astute observation, was this happens sometimes with actresses. She's so gorgeous that you don't take her super seriously as an actress.
Oh.
And she's too talented to be super commercial.
I relate
to
that
make
so much.
It's you got that model face and
model
those abstract
model
talents.
And just so much talent.
And immeasurable talent. And you're just I don't know how to process this. Yeah.
But
the
big box office actresses are of her generation were Sandra Bullock, Meg Ryan, Julia Roberts. Not actresses that I think at the time of their peak, you could give them any script and they'd make it work.
True.
Or they'd heighten material.
But Michelle could.
Right, but she never was a box office sensation in the way that
she's never been this draw, let's go see the new Michelle Pfeiffer movie.
Right.
Wow.
And I thought that was an interesting article, and I got it. Because she is so striking. And she is so good. You usually walk away from a movie with her in it and remember her.
Yeah.
Boys. And people are saying that about this movie.
I mean, that's cool. I mean, I do want to support that. I do want to support her. I think we can just start this campaign to just really, get her to number one on the IMDb star meter. I want
to... Let's get Michelle to number one.
To number one. I want her to just make such a huge groundswell of a comeback. Oh,
well, they're saying that she might get an Oscar nomination for it.
I sure hope. I sure hope. Because that is such a real thing. It's like, we know that about the industry. It's not about talent. If it were about talent, all these theater actresses that I'm obsessed with would have been a box office draw. Mm-hmm. But no, it's about like Julia Roberts, Sandra Bullock.
Accessibility.
It's about, usually it's about whiteness. Yep. And it's about accessibility. And like, who is someone we can put on the freaking screen that is like, approachable and somebody that like someone in the middle of Nebraska wants to come watch in a theater.
Right. And the thing is, I think right now there's really only been one,
and that's Jennifer
Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence. And I think with
Emma Stone, though.
Well, I think Emma Stone is close. Yeah. Mm-hmm, someone actually said that recently. They think Emma Stone is like the next Julia Roberts in a way. And I think that that's pretty astute.
Maybe, yeah.
It seems like Emma Stone draws a certain vitriol that Julia Roberts never did.
People did back in the day hate Julia Roberts.
Really?
I don't know. I get that feeling.
Because she was liked by women and men, which is, they say, what you need.
Right.
Sure. That's the whole thing. Yeah.
Emma, just from stories I've heard, is like a cool fucking person.
That's what I hear, too.
I've heard that, too. Jesse, Britta Filter, our friend, was her roommate in L.A.
What?
Oh, my God, what?
Yeah.
Britta?
They grew up together. And then, speaking of drag queens, I got a plug. Tammy Spanks.
I don't know what you guys
are all doing on a Sunday night, but you got to get your ass to Barracuda to see Tammy Spanks. And Britta Filter, go see all the New York queens. But anyway,
Britta's fucking amazing.
They're amazing.
Britta's going to be one of those household name drag queens.
Oh, yeah.
Britta Filter going to be on Slumber Party on my channel.
Can't wait.
Wait, but she lived with Emma Stone. She calls her Emily.
That's her real name, right?
Yeah, they grew up together in Arizona. They moved to L.A. together. Then Emma Stone started to do like pretty well, I guess. She's doing pretty okay.
Yeah, she's doing okay.
Now they're saying that she might be up for an Oscar again
for
playing Billie Jean King. Apparently she's better in this movie than she was in La La Land. And if she hadn't won last year, she would be a slam dunk.
Oh, dang.
That's what everyone's saying.
I'm excited for that movie.
I'm really excited for that movie. Because I didn't really know that this was like an event. Like historic event.
No, this is like a big one.
I don't know as much about it either, but I'm excited for
totally.
The trailer.
From being like a little sports kid, I knew about Billie Jean
King.
That's
cool.
Yeah.
Like, this was like, it was exactly that. It was called the Battle of the Sexes.
Between this like chauvinistic idiot.
Yes.
Yeah.
And who was like kind of like the John McEnroe of his time.
Sure.
Oh,
and
sure.
Billie Jean King, who was at the time a closeted lesbian women's tennis champion.
Right.
And he was like, let's do this. It'll be good for the sport. It'll get excited. And also, you know, whatever, I'll beat you, and don't be a pussy, like, do it. And she beat him.
She beat him. And
that's awesome.
And now, like, Battle of the Sexes is just, like, this, like, norm in tennis. I mean, I sound so stupid, but, like, am I correct? Like, now, like there are tennis events where it's, like, Battle of the Sexes, and it's just, like, you know, just male versus female.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, you know, modeled after that.
Right.
That's
that's, I think it's one of those things that's, like, you can't duplicate.
Of course not.
But they try.
Totally.
Where's my movie about Monica Salles getting stabbed? Do you
remember
that?
I didn't even know that this happened.
Okay, hello. Monica Salles wins a match. Hello. She walks over to her fans, says, hello, fans. A fan stabs her in the shoulder with a knife.
No.
And she survived?
She's totally fine.
Thank God. I mean, oh my God.
Was it her tennis arm?
Which one's your tennis arm?
Bitch, I don't know. Which one she swing the club?
Which one she swing the club?
I'm just...
I mean, that is
rule
like
rule number, I think...
30.
30. Rule number 30 of culture. Your tennis arm is the one you swing the club.
That's like a sort of a Nancy Kerrigan type thing.
It was a big...
Wait, and I'm happy to return to this because I can't believe we just talked about Tonya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan without talking about
Margo.
The film that's coming out.
Yes.
I, Tonya. It's called Tonya. I, comma, Tonya.
Can't believe it.
They
and it stars
it right.
Margot Robbie and Allison Janney as the mother. And I'm hearing it's basically Drop Dead Gorgeous on steroids.
What?
Which
I'm here for.
And also, I'm getting different accounts of it. So, like, I'm reading a lot of... First of all, I cannot wait to see this movie. I'm so down for
it. You don't even understand.
Are you reading different accounts about whether or not Margot Robbie thought Tonya Harding was a fictional character?
No. Okay. Also, I want to get Margot Robbie off the hook for this.
Okay, yeah.
Because, like you were just saying, she is from...
She might have missed it.
She is from a different country.
Yeah.
She's from a different country. I need to be known that I'll never let anyone off the hook.
But that is... I mean, it's the Olympics. It's an international event. So who knows...
She's our age.
I know about those Canadians who, or no, Russians, who I guess I don't know.
The Russians. Wait, are you talking about the controversy?
The figure skating.
The figure skating. The doubles.
The doubles.
Right. Yep. The Canadians.
They were Canadian, right?
Oh, God.
Russian?
Canadian? Is that? Yeah. Canadian.
Okay, but it wasn't on the level of Tanya and
no,
Nancy.
No,
not
no,
at all.
No,
I mean,
yeah.
It was a controversy in its own right, but it wasn't
drama.
One's crazy, stupid husband trying to break the other one's knee right after a practice.
Right.
So nuts.
It's insane, but the different accounts I'm hearing are that it's A, good,
uh-huh.
and like dramatically potent and humanizes her.
Yeah.
Or that it's like a crazy ass
campy
ass characterization of her where that like weirdly asks you to be on her side, but
I'm down for either or a version of both.
All I know is that Tanya Harding was happy with it. They said the director and Margot were being interviewed, and they said that she was, quote, great during the process.
Oh.
And she was shown the movie and that she was pleased with it.
I'm sure she's pleased. Like, she's getting, like, all this attention again.
Yeah. That was always the goal, honey. She wanted to be out from eighth place and up.
And
the spotlight.
Yeah, and she wanted to sell her life rights, honey.
But it's not attention that she wants.
You know Tanya Harding, I mean, she wanted any attention. That's why she was so fascinating. She cried when she was doing her performance and was like, my shoe,
yeah, but
came undone.
Have you seen the 30 for 30?
30 for 30.
It's the documentary that a lot of this is based on. It's a crazy, you have to, Tim. If you love Tanya, you have to go watch, I think it's like on Netflix or something. It's a 30 for 30, which is like an ESPN documentary series based in sports. But this one about Tanya Harding and Nancy Kerrigan is amazing. It's like modern day interviews with Tanya. And she's basically looking at the camera like, they took everything from me. All I wanted to do was skate all my life. I took it all. I took it all. My mother, my husband, I took it all. And it's so, you don't know what to believe because she's like, of course I didn't know. But she's so like, she's so worn down by the years.
I know.
That you're like, I don't know what to believe.
She was
in a desperate situation.
But there you go. Right there. That is why that story is huge and important and is fascinating, because like just that effect of that event on her life. Huge, dramatic, Shakespearean, everything.
Yeah, it is Shakespearean, and that's why they call it I, Tanya.
Yeah.
But
totally.
Also, think of this, and I will advocate for Tanya for this for a second. She's head and shoulders the most talented skater there. She was the first to do the triple axel.
Tanya Harding?
Tanya Harding. She was the best, apparently.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't have like the tape in front of me.
Right.
But she was the first woman to ever complete the triple axel on the ice. It was, and Margot says, like, they were shooting the movie, and she was like, okay, we'll just get a double to come in and do the triple axel. And then everyone on set that was like tasked with that was like, no, you don't understand.
No one
like,
can do that.
There's really very few people in the world that can actually do that, and you can't get them to come here and do it.
And look like you. I mean,
like,
that is wild. And it's so funny that the narrative that ended up taking hold was that she's like, was white trash and that she was poor, and like, mm-hmm. and you. Like, that's what you remember, and you don't remember that she was this amazingly skilled figure skater.
Well, because they grade also based on presentation.
Right.
And that's where she would get knocked.
And also when she was in the actual competition, she was very bad.
Yeah.
I remember being like, and Nancy Kerrigan was unfucking believable.
Magnetic,
like, I remember watching her and just being like, wow, she is powering through this knee injury. And I thought she did a triple axel.
I don't know that she ever did it. I know that Tanya was definitely the first.
I flip-flop so much that I just, I don't remember which one it was, but I do remember.
In this moment now, whose side? Tell us.
Oksana Bayul.
I'm sorry?
Oksana Bayul, who got...
That was a trick question.
Who beat Nancy Kerrigan, I'm pretty sure, for the gold, and...
You were supposed to say Michelle Kwan.
I love Michelle Kwan. I had a Michelle Kwan poster as well, and she was... All of these women had the most incredible outfits, and they would just dance skate to this music. They were all of them.
Christina Yamaguchi, Michelle
Yamaguchi. Even a little later, I was still into like Tara Lipinski.
Of course.
And
but Michelle is, I'm gonna say it, the Hillary Clinton of figure skating. Never got the gold. never had the moment she deserved.
Do you remember
the moment she deserved? Because she was
gold-worthy.
I'll never forget watching Sarah Hughes win the gold medal.
That horrible haircut. Don't get me started.
Yeah, but she deserved it. I mean, she turned it out.
She was incredible.
But I remember they just cut to a closed door, and it said
Michelle Kwan.
And she obviously, like, the vibe was that she was
I was such a Michelle Kwan fan that I, like, truly couldn't handle it. I was happy for Sarah Hughes because that was truly amazing skating.
Yeah.
But
I want a Michelle Kwan biopic now. Constance Wu.
Hell yes.
Make it happen.
Hell yes.
And Michelle Kwan campaigned for Hillary because, you know what? It's the same narrative. These women who work so hard.
Yes.
Who do not get what they so desperately deserve.
Oh. Michelle Kwan, Hillary Clinton, Alexis Michelle.
Alexis!
You're a monster.
Fuck you, Tim. Alexis is great.
She may have hired me at DragCon, and she looked fucking flawless.
She looked great at DragCon.
So did you go to DragCon?
Okay, here's the thing. Little tea, can we share this tea?
Share the tea.
We did.
Yeah, this is tea.
They reached out to us to moderate a panel.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Not even moderate. I think it was to be on a panel or moderate something. We were options as moderators, and then they reached back out and they said that their programming changed, but we'll be like passes.
Will we like these free passes? We said, of course. And then it just, the weekend went by, and it was just one of those weekends where we were just like, oh, there's a million other things going on. I'm not going to go all the way to the Javits Center. Like, it was one of those things.
You know what? I respect. Go ahead.
I went to the one in LA, and it's great. It's wonderful. It's very transparent that it's just like
merch,
which is cool. But
if
like,
you're not trying to spend the money to take those pictures with those queens, and like we are gonna do comedy with those queens we have already.
God willing.
Yeah, you know them or you meet them. I'm not gonna pay $60 to take a picture with Shay.
There you go.
Love you to death. But
who's your queen for the people for Tim?
Bob the drag queen is like hands down, without a doubt, my absolute favorite.
Agree. And even Bob and I got a little Twitter tiff, but I still
you
love
did get in a Twitter
I saw the tiff. I saw the tiff.
I mean, it wasn't even a tiff. I mean, Bob was just, you know, like
Bob was wrong.
Bob was a little salty, and I was just like, well, here's how I feel. Here's where I'm coming from, and it was fine. And like, love Bob to death. Still, Bob is one of my number ones. Here's a little thing. Someone some queen on Facebook was like, LOL at Shea Coulee charging $60 for a photo, but RuPaul charging $50. She's like, girl, who the fuck do you think you are charging more than RuPaul?
It was like everyone at DragCon was talking about it. Yeah, every person you walked by was
Shay
like 60%. But I will say in Shay's defense, she had a full queens like Shea Coulee and Kim Chi and somebody else had like not only the look
but
like the booth was an experience.
Yeah,
like it was almost like going into a haunted house. Like it was that cool.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, more than RuPaul.
Taylor was charging $5 in a dick pic.
And then I walk into DragCon, somebody grabs me and goes, Trinity is here. And I go, oh my God. And they go, Trinity K. Bonet. And I was
Was Trinity at DragCon?
No
what?
Merch for
Why,
me.
Bitch?
Whoa. Because you know what? Because this is what I hear. Ruby told us this. Remember at Nights Up, she was like, yeah, a lot of queens don't do DragCon because the booth fee is insane. It's like $1,500 to open.
No
up
way.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's a fucking... It's like a bell.
It's wild.
Money.
It's wild.
I hate
it's
that.
Wild.
Wait, I've heard your queens on here before. Jujubee is what you said.
Oh yeah, like Matt and I are Jujubee and Raven.
And Raven was Raven yours or
no
was...
no. The queen of my heart is Alyssa.
Yeah,
I mean, of course.
I feel very close to Alyssa.
Yeah,
all of us would agree, Alyssa.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Katya for all of season 7, but then like since then I've sort of popped off that a little bit. Bob is just like someone who like we would go see.
Icon.
That's so cool.
And like
and
like we saw like the full arc of Bob and like that is so cool.
I don't know. I think that for me, Alyssa is everything I want in that like she's just I don't know. She's that unexplainable quality.
Yeah.
Like she's just
I went
that...
to Look Queen and saw her recently after All Stars. So I did a thing with Alaska and Katya.
Yes.
Then literally this was the week of drag queens for me, of All Stars to drag queens. The next week she was at Look Queen.
Oh my God.
And Preston and I went, and I am telling you, I have never and never will again be at any show like that in my life. Tammy Spanks was standing next to me and she grabbed me and she was like, I'm so glad we got to go to a Beyonce concert together. Because that's what it felt like. She was performing the house down, so funny on the mic. Kept yelling at the DJ to play better music. And it was so funny. And just was like offering free drinks to everyone in the bar. And then the bartender would be like, you can't do that. And she'd be like, what you say to me? Like, just, it was the best show.
Alyssa is one of those people who, and this kind of goes back to your thing about like something just like opening up. I mean, like before she was self-aware, like would never have done this. Now that she knows her power and her humor and her spirit, like, everything is happening for her. It's so cool. Before we move on to
Wait, I want to do something special. So Tim, I want to do two things special.
Here we go.
Tim just released a video called, is it When You're a Kelly Clarkson Superfan?
Correct.
When You're a Kelly Clarkson Superfan. So talk to me about what your thoughts are on the new Kelly.
I'm obsessed with the new Kelly. I have never heard lyrics that bad in my life. And yet, I think it's incredible music.
It is incredible music.
So, so good. And I bop to it everywhere that I'm going. I think the whole album is going to be on fire.
Yeah, I have tea. I have tea.
I can't wait.
So she played the whole album for Entertainment Weekly, I guess. Oh. And they wrote up like, here's seven songs that are going to be like new Kelly Clarkson classics from the album. There is a, quote, Whitney Houston-esque ballad called I Don't Think About You, which is the breakup ballad for all time. I heard that it is based on her leaving RCA Records, but it's written in the style of, like, I'm leaving you forever, and guess what? I don't think about you.
Pick me up off the floor, because I am completely gagged.
I can't wait. And apparently this is the song that, quote, shows off her range, as if all the other songs aren't doing
that. Hadn't done that.
That this is the one that shows off her range.
That's incredible. Amazing. Did they say Didn't I would be one of those songs?
Didn't I wasn't even on the list, and Didn't I sounds amazing.
Didn't I sounds you play like the best one.
Ramin Sotouda was like tweeting out from the Rainbow Room where they held like a big party for her on the day that the two songs came out and the album announcement was made. The Rainbow Room in New York like had a big party for her, and she played like seven songs. She played six songs from the new album and Walk Away, which she's been performing Walk Away a lot because I think she thinks it fits with her new sound. It's like an old song that she has that she thinks fits in with what she's doing.
That's cool.
And it might be an RCA dig too.
It might be an RCA dig. The tea that she's spilling about RCA is fucking piping hot.
The Dr. Luke thing that you
read that
was oof.
Oh, I didn't read that.
So basically, she was a co-writer on My Life Would Suck Without You, but
they gave it all to Max Martin.
No, this is right after My December, which was her album that she wanted to do for her. That Clive Davis was like, "Fuck you, we're not promoting it."
Awful.
And they're like, "Learn your lesson. You want to make no money. You want people that work to work for you to make no money. Then do what you're doing."
That's such bullshit.
And then she said, "Okay, fine." And all I ever wanted was kind of like her Red Flag album. Like, okay. She said one thing. She said, "I don't want to work with Dr. Luke." She said, "I'll work with anyone else. Don't make me work with him. Literally, no one but this person." The very first single, they're like, "You're going to work with Dr. Luke." She says, "I'm not going to work with Dr. Luke." They forced her to do it, or they told her they wouldn't release her album because I think she had a very bad experience recording since you've been gone with him. I have a feeling he was verbally abusive towards her in the studio. That's like where, that's like the tea that I'm hearing.
Burn RCA down, bury Dr. Luke in the words of Matt Rogers, bury Clive Davis.
But bury Dr. Luke. Yeah. Clive Davis is Satan himself, I think.
Yep.
And I think he's one of the reasons why Whitney is dead.
Thank you!
But the fact is, Kelly...
Tim and I just shared a look. Anyway,
Kelly like changed a lot of the lyrics to My Life Would Suck Without You and deserved a writing credit. And they said, "So do you want a writing credit?" And she said, "I don't want my name near his."
Ah!
She said, "I don't care how much money I'm going to lose.
So
they can
much.
Have it as much as they want." She's like, "I want to send a message to the people that work with me that this is not what's important to me." She was pissed that they made her
do
that.
Heroic.
And then she also got fucked over on that album because Ryan Tedder was using like identical tracks.
Already Gone in Halo.
And Halo. And
Beyonce's Halo.
Yeah, Beyonce's Halo.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is henceforth known as Beyonce's Halo.
Well, no, just to make the distinction that it was
right.
That like Ryan Tedder basically had the same chord progression, same melodies for Already Gone and Halo.
And a lot of his other songs.
Yeah.
If you listen to a lot of his music. One Republic's Ryan Tedder.
Oh, golly. Well, I was like,
EXO
who
was really
are you
good
talking
and
about?
He helped write EXO. EXO was great.
Well, he's a talented musician. Right. There's nothing to do with that, but a lot of those songs sound the same.
And he just
It's like these mid-tempo mega ballads.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she also got fucked over on that song and was public about it at the time.
She's not
so afraid. She's been very unhappy for a long time. So it's cool that...
Those videos you were showing me of her, Matt was showing me the videos of her doing stuff live, and you were like, look how happy she is.
Yeah,
she's glowing. She really does look...
Because she's able to dress and act and do the things she wanted. Yeah. Because she also said recently in an interview that at RCA, they had like every major female vocalist. Like Sony RCA, which is the whole company, they had like Beyonce, Christina Aguilera, Alicia Keys. They had like everybody, Pink, mm-hmm. everyone. And she said, the way she says it is, she always wanted to make an album where she was singing like soul or urban music,
yeah, yeah.
but they would never let her because they didn't want her to compete with other people they had on the roster that did that. Mm. So she was always their quote unquote pop rock girl.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't, she always like made the same music.
Yeah.
Like Since You've Been Gone was followed by My Life Without Without You, was followed by Stronger, was followed by, you know, all these kind of
Rock pop rock songs.
And she was never allowed to do anything different. Meanwhile, if you see her live or see any of her live performances, she just does so many more things.
Everything, yeah.
So
you know what? That's huge. And just hearing you talk about Kelly in this way in depth, it makes me so excited for the new album.
Well, there's gonna be a lot of that.
Yeah.
Because October 27th the album comes out, and you know that I'm gonna be promoting it.
Yes.
Because that's my friend.
Oh, that's your friend. That's your dear friend.
That's my dear friend.
I can't wait for you to meet her someday.
Oh,
I really
want to
meet her.
You're
and can I tell you something? I am manifesting it. I want to meet her during this album cycle promotion. Somehow.
You can do it.
Some way.
I think it'll happen.
We're witches, and we are
this is the practical magic
right
coming.
Now. Yeah. You will meet Kelly Clarkson.
You will meet Kelly Clarkson.
You will meet Kelly Clarkson.
I will. Kelly Clarkson.
You will meet Kelly Clarkson.
This album cycle. What is it called? Meaning of Life?
It's called Meaning of Life.
Meaning of Life.
I really
And I
want to
do one other thing. So tonight the Emmys are on.
Yes.
So this will air on Wednesday. So I want us all to guess what will win some awards.
It's real close this year.
It's real close this year, and we'll see who wins, and that person will buy the drinks.
Oh, that person who wins buy the drinks?
We'll buy the drinks at Tammy Spanks on Sunday
so,
at 10 p.m.
Hell yeah.
This is a gag
at
category.
Barracuda. The legendary venue, and Tammy's following in some very big footsteps, and she will fill she will fill those shoes with aplomb.
You guys don't even understand. I've never seen a drag show where I was just like, oh, every single song is exactly the song I want to hear right now.
She is.
She does log rolls into the audience. She's so funny.
Phenomenal. Saw her perform in Cherry Grove this summer. So great. She did my comedy show, Drag Court. She was phenomenal. She is really a consummate professional and so talented.
Okay. Let's talk best drama series. So I'm just going to say the ones that have a shot at winning, which is not House of Cards and Better Call Saul. So Westworld, Stranger Things, The Crown.
That's
a limited series.
Sorry. Oh, yes, of course.
And there is Handmaid's Tale.
I think you're saying it's Stranger Things. You're leaning towards Stranger
Things.
Well,
I have a feeling that Stranger Things is going to win.
Yeah.
Do we have to compete with you, or can we agree?
You can agree.
I really want Stranger Things to win, so I'm going to also assume that, too.
I think Stranger Things is...
Maybe Handmaid's Tale is the biggest competition?
No, but no? Matt is saying this, and I don't know if this applies to the show overall, but Matt is saying it with the best actress in a drama series category, Elizabeth Moss is not going to get those votes because of the whole Scientology.
I think people are sensing a lot of hypocrisy in her,
yep,
and that's not going to rub off well, despite the fact that she is very overdue for an Emmy because she went years without winning. And she probably does deserve to win, but I just don't think people are down for the Scientology thing anymore, especially because Leia Remini's show won.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I think there's
and in Hollywood,
a message
that's like
being
such
sent.
A thing.
It's like a statement to be like, I'm going to vote against the Scientologist. Yeah.
It's an interesting category because Westworld has the most nominations of any show. It's tied with SNL. And that would ordinarily mean like that people would want
to show in.
That would be the one to win.
Sure.
But also there's The Crown, which like a lot of people
people
and a lot of
that.
People feel like Netflix is due for a win, and it's like the prestige kind of royal show that usually does well at awards. Such a snooze, I think.
Quick tangent. Do you guys miss the time when we all were watching the same thing?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, you all had like the one. This is maybe an insane thing to say, but I think this type of thing has a lot to do with the election, to tie it all in, that we like have, our generation is so used to having everything so catered to us, down to our TV shows,
yeah,
that they were like, no Bernie, no Hillary, no Trump, no. I'm going to pick Jill Stein. Is their version of you can cater what comes in your newsfeed. You can cater what you look at on Instagram.
Sure.
You can cater what TV shows you watch.
Yeah.
Like, everything is so individualized.
Customized.
That we shouldn't have to conform to two parties. We should, and I just think it's so nuts.
It is. It's a very millennial thing.
I just want to say one thing.
I do miss those days.
Sudi Green is at the Emmys right now, and she just sent a picture of her dress, and can you fucking gag at this?
Oh, my God. Red.
Look.
Oh my God.
She looks so good.
She looks phenomenal.
I'm saying red for filth. She's wearing this amazing red dress. She looks incredible. She looks like fucking Alaska in her perfume commercial.
Are you ready for me?
All right, let's move on.
Yes.
Okay, this is huge. It seems like you've got one prepared. I sort of have one. So how about you go first, Matt, and I'll time you.
Okay, I will go first, and this is, of course, I Don't Think So, Honey. This is the big ol' thang in our show.
Yep.
Yeah. And Tim Murray has slayed before, and he will probably slay again, but first, me.
Here we go. First, Matt Rogers. This is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey. Time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, the modern renaissance of horror movies. Bitch, I am not going to be squealing and squirming and chirping watching these movies. That is not it. I am not going in there. The first time I saw that clown, I said there's something fucked up about that clown. Now I hear it's ripping off kids' arms, dragging them under, eating them. No fucking thank you. I don't like scary. Mother! Exclamation point. I don't think so, honey. How about a question mark? How about a question mark at the end of mother? Mother? I don't think so. I answer that with a no.
30 seconds.
I answer that question with a no. I don't like to be afraid. How about this happy death day? No, bitch. I don't want to watch a girl die. Again and again. I don't think so, honey. And I know it's gonna do well, because guess what? All these teens are figuring out that horror movies make them come, and I'm not into it, bitch. Stop it. Get your hands off of each other's crotches.
Go home,
watch a kind comedy with Sandra Bullock, bitch.
And that's 1 minute. I don't think so, honey. We're gonna go see Happy Death Day, and we're gonna love it, I think.
It better be comical.
I think it'll be...
It better be scary and funny, like Scream.
I think it'll be scary and, fun, like Scream. Not necessarily funny, but fun. And teens coming to horror movies...
That's where they go.
All right.
That's where the teens go.
This is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, and forgive the basicness of this. The MTA, bitch.
Oh,
today,
God.
I had to go meet Tim Murray and Henry Kapersky for something I was so excited to do to help them with their video, and it took me 55 minutes for what should have been a 20-minute commute, bitch.
Longer.
I Don't Think So, Honey, the MTA. This was the longest commute in my 57 fucking years in this garbage city. It was horrible. I hated every minute of it. It was sweaty. All the lines were down. Every line.
30 seconds.
Every line. And honey, I took the bus today too. I did the subway and the bus, honey. Yes, that's right, MTA. You cannot... Don't poke holes in this, because I took every single vertical in your stupid, stupid umbrella, and I hated every minute of the bus. I hated every minute of the train. You better get your act together. I go to Europe, and it's such a better experience. I go to Asia, forget it. It's amazing. MTA, you have a lot of catching up
to do.
And Cuomo, you better fucking do right by us.
That's 1 minute. Cuomo, you better do right by us.
Okay.
You better be a do right man.
You better be a do right man. Because you know what? Oh, God. And I know that it's so boring to shit on the MTA, but they deserve every word of hate that
Absolutely.
Comes their way.
Today was crazy. And
today
that was
so
I felt
bad.
So bad for you, because we didn't care at all, but everyone
was
having
late.
That same problem.
Everyone was late.
I had a fucking actually really good experience today.
Okay, whatever, man.
Wow.
No, you were late to this. What are you talking about?
I was 3 minutes late.
3 minutes of my life I'll never get back.
Here we go.
This is Tim Murray's I Don't Think So, Honey.
I can't wait.
And his time... It starts now.
I don't think so, honey. People who slide into my DMs to ask about my friend.
Oh!
If you are sliding into my DMs, honey, you better be talking about me, honey.
Ah!
You better be talking about how handsome I am, honey. You better Ooh. Be talking about how funny I am, honey.
Hey.
You better be donating $100 to my Patreon account so that I can make more comedy videos,
Patreon.
Honey.
Patreon.
Patreon. Honey, you're garbage, honey, if you're doing that, honey. And... You look at my Instagram, you see a conventionally hot guy, so you click on his link, and then you go to his page and you see him shirtless, and you think that's hot, honey? Funny is hot, honey. You're not attracted to me because I'm posting pictures of me in wigs, honey? Fuck off, honey. Gay men in comedy and women in comedy are not here to be your clowns, honey. We are fully realized sexual beings, honey. And I'm not, you're trash, and I'm not going to get... Yes. I'm not going to have my friend take you out.
Ooh!
Because we already did the chores this week, honey.
Oh!
Don't need me to get laid, honey, because you can go fuck yourself.
Ah! That's 1 minute!
Wow, amazing.
That is a great button.
You might be iconic.
Ah!
You might be.
Iconique. Will I hang in the All-Stars Hall of Fame with Pat Regan and
Alaska?
We'll
have to find out at the next... I don't think so, honey. Live.
And there might be a little format switch up.
Ooh. Maybe we've been talking.
Real quick, before we sign off, I have to get sentimental on you both for a lame moment. I don't think so, honey, live.
Oh, my God, what?
And the listeners, if you haven't been I Don't Think So, Honey, Live, you gotta. I Don't Think So, Honey, Live, part one was the week leading up to it was the worst week of my entire life.
Oh my God.
Don't even want to fully get into it, but basically, like, dark shit was happening.
Sorry,
I canceled everything that was happening, and I was like, I'm going to keep this one thing because I just need like one moment to like take my mind off what's going on in my personal life. And I went to that show, and when I die, I will think about like the happiest moments of my life.
Oh my God.
And being on that stage and like you guys squirting me with water is one of them. That and seeing Idina Menzel.
And this very day.
But truly, it really, I was going to write you both a handwritten thank you note about what it meant to me.
Oh my God.
You should have.
And literally,
you should have done that. You should have really done that.
I did. It's called What Happened.
No!
Don't you hold that book up.
Tim, no, you were phenomenal. And truly. That just warms our hearts.
And you're bringing joy to the kids, and thank you for that.
And someone out there's listening.
And we are so excited that you are making as much stuff as you are, and you lift my day up whenever I see you.
Yes.
I really, truly adore you both. You've had such a positive impact on my life.
I'm going to cry.
That's true.
We are crying here. We are crying over there. We are crying over there. This is Las Culturistas podcast. My name is Mateo Rogelios.
My name is Bow Nong Nong.
That's Tim Murray.
We love you. Bye.
Bye.
Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more podcasts, please visit ForeverDogProductions.com.